welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the Executive Director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you are listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. I have this evening Arnold Kemp in the studio with me. Arnold is a Bahamian American living in Chicago who is a practicing artist. He's actually shown work in the National Exhibition and actually was part of a couple of shows that we took to Vienna and also to Leipzig. He's a very well-respected artist, having received several grants like the Joan Mitchell Foundation grant, the Guggenheim grant. I'd love to know how many Bahamians actually won some of those, because, you know, LeVar also got the Joan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really, again, like for such a small country,
right?
I bet you were in the top five of how many times an artist has received one of those grants. So bravo to you.
Thank you.
And so we were talking before the break on some of the work you're doing down here as the dean of the graduate school, and some of the information you wanted to give people. What else have you done? Like, have you met with some students? I think you did a workshop this weekend. So why don't you talk a little bit about it, about your impressions having met some of our young up-and-coming artists?
Sure. It was very exciting the day I arrived giving a talk in, I think it's called the American Room at the UB, where I spoke a little bit about my work, but more about Chicago and the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And I would say about 18 students were there, and some faculty were there as well.
Which is a lot, by the way.
It was quite terrific. I collected their information and found out what programs they might be interested in so that my office back in Chicago can send more information about future programs.
And I think it's probably worth saying to the audience that they do also offer quite good scholarships. Obviously, not always. They're merit-based and all the rest of it. But I know Bahamians who've been offered, you know, as much as even a full ride. So
yes.
It's not that, like, well, here we are shilling for the school because we want to, like, you know, make money. It's really, this is an opportunity for Bahamian creatives to maybe go to one of the leading schools in the world, mm-hmm. and still be offered assistance for that. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to mention that.
Yeah. So that's very true. And one, I always think of myself in when I'm in situations like this as sort of role modeling, mm-hmm. so people can see that it's possible. I didn't have any role models growing up, and it was...
No, you were talking about your career, and I was thinking, what must it have been like to be a person of color as a junior curator at the Smithsonian 30 years ago or whatever? Like, that kind of been easy, right?
It wasn't easy.
I'm sure it wasn't.
And very eye-opening, interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of role modeling, after that talk the next day, I got to meet with three great young people here, Jody Minnis, Matthew Romming, and Blake Fox. I met with each one of them for about 45 minutes or an hour, just talking to them about the work that they're making and the futures they might see for themselves. It was very close to what would happen if I was meeting with one of my graduate students, mm-hmm. at the Art Institute of Chicago. I would meet, mm-hmm. in their studio, and we would look at their work, and I would offer some critique. I would offer them some areas of research, and I would mostly be encouraging as long as they're really interested in what they're doing. I try not to be too harsh, and especially with Jody, Matthew, and Blake, I didn't have to be harsh in any way because they're people who I think are Bahamians who are going to be stars.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed meeting them.
Yeah.
And the next day I met with students, or it was yesterday, I met with students at the UB in a critique class. There were four students, and I met with Michael Edwards and Tessa Whitehead, mm-hmm. and
Heino Schmidt.
We got together and we were critiquing student work, and that was really interesting too. They're dealing with really interesting things like how the media functions, the objectification of women's bodies, even looking at Bahamian pop culture and slang related to Bahamian culture, things I learned like tingsy, I thought was really
tingsy,
interesting.
Trapsy.
Tingsy and trapsy. it was a fun day. And now I'm packing my bags and getting ready to get on a plane.
And then we also did like a little tour of the island. We went out to Island House. We saw some of the artwork there. And we went to the current at Bahamar.
Mm-hmm. Stan Burnside.
Yeah, the Stan Burnside show. And the Fairwind exhibition.
Uh-huh.
So what were you, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, obviously you know the context very well. So you understand kind of the challenges that we're dealing with. What were your sort of impressions as a visitor to see, you know, a show like that?
That was my first time seeing Bahamar and looking at that exhibition, 100 Years of Art from the Bahamas. Mm. I was amazing, actually, and to see certain artists' names repeated in different contexts, whether it was about spirituality or the land or the sea, just to see so much of our culture in images, mm-hmm. mostly, not so many sculptures there. Mm-hmm. But I also love this salon hang and how much was presented. So it was really the art was taking over those corridors instead of the architecture of the space overwhelming the artwork. It was very beautiful and moving.
Yeah, that's great. And do you think, like now you've been here, I know we sort of talk on the terrace, we're like, oh, you got to come back and set up a studio. But do you feel that like trips down here affect your own practice at all? Or do you have like a longing to, I know you talked a little bit about Cat Island and wanting to go there and that's where your family's originally from. Like, how is it like as an artist of living elsewhere, living in a very different context, to come down here and then spend this time and kind of reconnect? How do you think that, is that something that you sort of, that you feel like shifts something inside you with regard to your own practice?
I think one thing, it shows me that there's something in my DNA that comes out in my artwork that I didn't always understand until recently, but realizing that a lot of the work I do, it's similar in its movement, I think, it's similar to the way someone might be working on a junkanoo costume.
Mm-hmm.
Or a mask, and it's very intuitive, very hands-on, and very materially based. Material,
yes.
Whether it's I'm using black glitter, or whether I'm using doll's eyes, or whether I'm using a lot of aluminum foil right now, or cut paper. My work has been very material. So sometimes when I come here, I'm excited. I see things that are just around in our culture that maybe people don't value, but things like conch shells, I want to bring them back. There's so many things here that I would like to bring back and incorporate into sculptures that I'm making right now in my studio in Chicago.
I'm pretty sure we can help you there. If you need us to ship you some. Oh, you know what? I have to take you over to Kendra's show before you leave now that you said that. Because it's funny, you hit like a word that I use a lot. Like when people ask me, because it's such an impossible question. People say, oh, so what's Bohemian art like? And you're like, okay. If somebody said, what's French art like? How would you even answer that question?
Mm-hmm.
But I think like materiality is something I always come back to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that does have something to do with, and you know, quite often a lot of artists that became very popular here and are very good painters and are part of our canon were famous for doing landscape painting because that's something they learned from Europeans coming, the Europeans that came at the turn of the century and were doing all the lovely landscape painting. And I always say, you know, nobody on the boat from Africa was doing oil landscape painting.
Right.
Before, like it was, again, like the art that is, as you said, in your DNA, mm-hmm. it's in your belly,
mm-hmm.
is very much related to material. Like you think of carving, you think of processional, right? Processional outfits, you know.
Raffia, sea sponge,
exactly.
Coconuts. Oh my God, the coconuts.
All those things. But you think about, again, all the performative artifacts, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, people wear on their necks or, again, masks, costumes. And you see that so much reflected in art here. And a lot of artists, even though they're like amazing painters, when they start to like, again, add objects. And even if they're a painter, they'll stretch their own canvas. They'll build mm-hmm. their own frames. Mm-hmm. There is something about being kind of connected manually. Like, mm-hmm. And even like a form of labor, like connected to the art that is very deep.
And the body.
And the body.
You know, to look at the scale of Heino Schmidt's drawings that were mm-hmm. at Bahamar, and you know, you can look at them, but you actually feel them with your body because they're so big and they're bigger than you are. It's really exciting. I was glad I saw Haino yesterday so I could tell him how much I love those drawings.
They were amazing. We had them in the last NE, and they're just, and I don't even know how he does them because they are so big. I don't know how he, I think he must almost physically insert himself.
Oh, it's a physical, I'm sure it's a very physical drawing practice.
And now I think, you know, I never would have thought about it before either until this conversation. But when I think about those early works of yours that I saw with the, we talked about them, you sort of reproduce sort of the Ku Klux Klan hood in African printed fabrics, you know, that does, it is very performative, mm-hmm. right? Even mm-hmm. though it was a static image, it was a 2D, it was a photograph. It was like a, it was a performative act involving your body.
Right. Very much so.
So I've got to send you some conch shells in the mail. Is that what I got to do?
Or I'll just come back. I'll do some experiments. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. So so are you in the studio now?
I'm in the studio a lot right now, making prints and sculptures, looking at my relationship to my grandfather, who was also Arnold Kemp and was a tailor. And amazingly, there are clothing things that he made for my father when my father was coming to the U.S. that my father, I think because he grew up in the Depression, tends not to use special things, will save them. And now that my father's 93, each time I visit him, he will give me like one object. Like he recently gave me these exquisitely made shorts that my grandfather made for him. The stitches are so small, you can't even see them there. And he gave them to me, and I said, I could never wear these. I could never be as small as you were. My father was a boxer also, so he was quite fit and mm-hmm. had a tiny waist. But I'm incorporating, it's almost like I'm doing through my father an unsolicited collaboration with my grandfather and connecting the generation so I might make I have done this. I've made a larger limestone sculpture, and seeing all the limestone here is mm-hmm. amazing. And then
you see, that you picked limestone to do it was also in your DNA, right?
It was in the DNA. And then I've just draped this sculpture with these shorts that my grandfather made, and it's really emotional and very moving, beautiful. Yeah.
That's
actually
amazing. Well, again, and like
and it's, so material.
It's allowing him, your grandfather, to be the artist that he was not able to identify as in his mm-hmm, lifetime, in mm-hmm. a way, right?
And my father also. I mm-hmm. think my father, who studied chemistry, is actually a true artist. And when I say he can make anything, I've seen him, and he's helped me with art projects. And he can do anything he wants in metal or wood. And he's often told me that when he was a boy, he learned how to crochet.
How interesting.
He's really talented.
God, we got to get Dad down here.
I know.
Got to get a family reunion.
Amazing.
How old is he now?
93.
Wow.
Amazing.
And you also have to talk to him about his early days here. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's got a lot of stories.
He's got some good stories.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's got
you yesterday that his favorite way of meeting, talking to the young people here, they could learn this lesson. His way of meeting a young lady was to grab her hat and throw it into a tree, and she would cry, and then he'd climb up into the tree and rescue her hat, and then would be a hero, and then they would have a sweet date.
It sounds very, very gallant. And like you said, not like it's done today at all in any way, shape, or form. So I guess we're hoping that in next year you're going to be seeing a lot of Bahamian applications to the Art Institute of Chicago, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
I think I've identified some very talented people, and the school will benefit, and the students from here will benefit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the community will benefit because those students will return mm-hmm. with the knowledge and skills that they might learn.
And will be able to help us after something like we just had.
Right.
I mean, we just talked about that, about the effect of Dorian. And we just had a team from the Smithsonian Cultural Disaster Rescue Initiative, and it's basically sort of pulled out of different museums and departments of the Smithsonian who come down to, again, like help identify what needs to be saved, tell us how to save it. But wouldn't it be great to have our own crack team,
you know,
or art therapists? You spoke to that too. So right. I think it's really interesting that you have an art therapy program.
Art therapy, art education as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, that the arts can help us remind us about what is important after an event like Dorian, you know, in terms of preserving images or just preserving spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And helping us get through things that might be traumatizing, giving people an outlet, bringing them a sense of peace or a sense that things will be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also really concerned that people think about the future and think about how to prepare if something like that, if something like Dorian ever hit the Bahamas again, like especially in Nassau, you know, who will be the leaders that will help people to overcome trauma and to remember what's important?
Yeah. And you're so right that, well, that's what the guy, the lead of the Smithsonian, his name is Richard Curran. And he actually put together the Smithsonian thing 25 years ago when Stan Burnside and Amos Ferguson all went up to Washington. So he's worked at the Smithsonian for years, part of the Folklife Festival. That was a big moment for Bahamian art. So he already knew quite a few people down here from back then. But he said, you know, I've gone around the world. I've gone to Iraq. I've gone to Haiti. I've gone to all these places. And he said, and after an event like this, culture is what the people go to. And it's what they need, their prayer, their song, their tales, their food, their, you know, all the things that connect us as humans become even more important. And I think we forget that. We think culture is like, oh, it's a painting on a wall. It's not important. No, 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 no. It's like how we connect with each other. It's how we tell our story. It's how we recover from our story. It's all those things. And he said that I've seen that over and over again, that at those times, that is when culture is most needed.
I had mentioned the program at the school called Historic Preservation, and I really see as the grad dean, I'm leading the charge and moving that historic preservation into thinking more about cultural preservation. So it's not just the preservation of material things like a building, but recording people's songs and the stories.
They were doing that too. They had a specialist, an ethnographic musicologist, and they were also, there was a team here that were, in fact, only interested in intangible culture. So they were going to the various centers. They were talking to people, getting stories. Again, like what songs are coming out of this? What stories are being handed down? What knowledge is being, like hands-on day-to-day knowledge is being passed down? And all of those things. So it's great that you're doing that because it is, culture is so much more than a building, right? It's the people that lived inside and how they lived their lives. And
I hope they're recording the songs, the hymns that are sung in the churches.
Of course.
Because my parents really gave that to me. And I go back to, I was asking my aunt the other day who goes to St. Matthew's. I said, do you know the hymn Blessed Assurance? She's like, well, I don't like to sing, but I do know it. She's like, it was really, we had a little singing in the garden the other day. It was nice.
Yeah, no, that is, I mean, for me too. I mean, I went to Anglican churches. So, but again, the hymns are, they're the same hymns. And I can go in and I don't need the hymn book because I learned them all as a kid and passing them all to my kid. And it's true. It's something that's really deeply within us. So unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time together, Arnold.
Thank you. This was amazing. And thanks. I wanted to say thank you to the NAGB and for UB for hosting me and allowing me to meet with students here in the Bahamas. It was a real honor, a real honor. I also didn't only work with college students. I worked with some high school students at a workshop at the NAGB and spent about 4 hours just critiquing their work and actually teaching them what critique is. And it was a very exciting moment.
Yeah, good. Well, it was an honor to have you. It was really a great few days. And we appreciate all you did to like come down again and like show these possible futures to our, you know, our next generation who will, as you said, be the ones to lead us. So it's really exciting. So thank you so much. I want to thank the audience for listening again tonight. And remember, you can always go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs. If you missed part of the show, go to the Learn menu and then scroll down to Blank Canvas and you can hear our conversation and any of the other ones. check out our calendar, see what's upcoming. We have the special holiday tour this Sunday on the 15th. We have a show opening on the 19th. We've got all kinds of stuff happening at the NAGB. And don't forget that for the rest of the month of December, the NAGB is free for everybody who is living here in the Bahamas. And we really encourage you to come and find sanctuary, find beauty, find conversation, find many things. We're there and we are waiting to welcome you. So I think there'll be another show before Christmas, but I'll still say Merry Christmas. So Merry Christmas to everyone listening.
Merry Christmas.
And thank you, Arnold.
Yes.
And we'll talk soon. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the Executive Director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Have a really great evening and good night.
Compliments of the season.